Hello and welcome to the Practical Tech Leadership Podcast from Venturi's Voice. I'm your host, Liam Donoghue. In this show, I'll be chatting to C-level executives from all sectors about their careers in tech. The show aims to bring you insights, anecdotes and stories from like-minded professionals that you can learn from and apply to your own careers. If you like the show and you want to hear more from us, you can follow us on SoundCloud, iTunes or Spotify, or you can join our Slack community. Thank you, enjoy the show. Hello, you're listening to another episode of Venturi's Voice. I'm the host for today, Liam Donoghue. My guest today is Craig Bilner, the Head of Engineering at News UK. Hello, Craig. I hope you're well. How's your day going?
I'm great, thanks. It's a little bit rainy, but pleasure to meet you.
I mean, yeah, it is the UK, isn't it? It's always going to be a bit rainy. It's great to hear from you, and thanks for coming on the show. We're going to be tackling a spectrum of topics today, including methods for avoiding burnout, hiring and scaling teams, and we'll be discussing which career path could be right for you. But before we start, though, I always like to ask our guests to give us a bit of an overview of their career and experiences. Could you tell me and the listeners a bit about, you know, your background in tech and your career journey up to today?
Of course. I suppose I haven't had the most conventional path. I sort of fell into it after university. Actually, as a business analyst, I was writing models in VBA. That's where I started out. But it turns out that I actually quite enjoyed coding. So then I moved on to VB and then C Sharp, and then I became a C Sharp developer. But around that time, IE7 had, IE7 around that time. And the internet or the World Wide Web was starting to become really interesting. And the client side was becoming quite a creative space. JavaScript was sort of getting better. And a few libraries started to come out, obviously jQuery, popped up MooTools, and it started allowing people to build these really interesting web applications. And then when IE8 landed, it was sort of a breath of fresh air, because not only could you actually debug what you were building, it actually felt like something you wanted to use. And then obviously Firefox, Chrome started to come through. And I then became a full-on JavaScript developer, essentially made my way through Knockout.js. That was fantastic. That sort of really brought that two-way data binding idea alive. And you could make, I made this, you know, quite complex, rich application for the company I was working for at the time, with tests as well, which was unheard of at the time. And it was a really good experience from where we were before. And then just making my way onto Backbone and then Marionette with Backbone. And then React came along, flirted with Angular a bit. And then React completely changed the game. So I thought, all right, I'll move up to London and really invest myself into React. And just went from there, moved on to Ember. And then joined News UK, where we built out a large cross-platform component library in React, React Native, Node on the back end, GraphQL, Lambdas, every sort of buzzword cutting piece of technology you can think of. And that really, really sealed it for me. I thought, I think I've done what I've needed to do over that sort of 10-year period. I really enjoyed it. And so I've now moved back to the back end to build out a headless platform as a service in Go.
That sounds amazing. One thing I'd like to pick up on there is the comment you made about, you know, you fell into sort of like a software career path. We get quite a lot of people on the show who say the same thing. So when you were at university, did I hear right, you did a business analyst degree?
Oh, no, I was a business analyst after university. I did economics at university.
Economics, yeah.
Because I went to a traditional school and computing wasn't really, it was just something you did as a hobby. Mm-hmm. You just played around with it. It wasn't so, like, as of today, the world's completely changed where there's Scratch now and other programming languages for children, you know, so people are learning it from 6, 7, 8 years old, mm-hmm. which is fantastic. But it wasn't until I'd say I was in just, well, yeah, it was just after university where I really started taking it seriously.
Yeah. One of the reasons to mention that is that we always, on this podcast, we always have a lot of conversation with our guests between whether they got into technology because they loved playing with new tech, or they got into technology because they wanted to use it to achieve business goals. And whenever we have people on who said they did economics or politics or business management, they always end up falling into technology because it's a way to achieve their business goals. So would you say that was the same for you, or was it more a case that you got out of doing the economics degree and you were just really fascinated by tech?
It was when you're building out sort of spreadsheets and macros and writing VBA to build these more complex models, it just sparked my interest in programming as a whole and where it could go, as I felt quite constrained by VBA, and that's where I then started going into VB and C Sharp. I don't think it was to achieve business goals. I think it was actually because I enjoyed the creativity of it. It's sort of... I'm not a creative writer, but I enjoy writing code and creating things with code.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm currently learning JavaScript. I've been learning code for the past year and a half now. And one of the things that really struck me was how creative it is. And I think a lot of people think traditionally, like, coding is quite, you know, it's quite a hard science, very straight edge, like, yes, you know, you're building something technical, and I don't think a lot of people appreciate how much sort of flair and how much personal creativity goes into something as simple as just building a website. I think it's really interesting. But let's move on a bit and let's talk about News UK. Obviously, the head of engineering there. Could you tell us a bit about News UK, certainly for maybe the listeners who don't know the company, you know, its background, its mission, and maybe certainly in the technical sphere, some of its plans for the future?
Sure. So News UK is quite a large company. It runs, say, The Times, Sunday Times, TLS, HarperCollins, The Sun, Wireless, Sport Unruly, and all of those publications have sort of different demographics, different considerations, different clients, different ways of producing content. And media has transitioned massively over from the 90s to the 2000s. So the 90s, essentially, people took newspapers and they put them online and they were free. And then about 10 years ago, News UK, or News Corp, should I say, News UK is a part of News Corp, so that's the Wall Street Journal, New York Post, and the Australian titles. The Wall Street Journal and The Times put up a hard paywall 10 years ago. But that business model didn't really change. So if you didn't pay your money, you see a few sentences of the article. Then you pay some money, you can see all the article. As simple as that. But over the last 5 years, I'd say, New York Times in particular, it's really pioneered different ways of tapping into news segments and looking at different ways to allow people access to their publications and looking at ways to make money. So that's the hardest thing, is how you build new business models. Where we are today culturally, where people are invested in mobile and actually are willing to pay for good news. So I'd say the biggest challenge at the moment is through this transition period, this really interesting time where a paywall doesn't suffice. So what else can you do? What other products can you create? How can you create those products? And how can you use technology to do that? News Corp actually went into AWS very early. So a lot of our stuff is already in the cloud, but we have a lot of legacy at the same time. So it's how do you move from that legacy architecture to where we want to be and stay agile as a business, which is a fantastic challenge in itself.
Yeah, it sounds like a really big digital transformation. So as the head of engineering, you must be responsible for hiring a lot of people. What do you look for when you're finding new engineers to come and work on your team?
So we hire both contractors and permanent employees. So I kind of see them as two distinct groups. While they work all together, obviously, And the contractors are providing a service, whereas the permanent employees are working for you as a company. It means the interview is slightly different. So when I'm looking for contractors, I want really strong developers, engineers, who can come in and do a really good job and build really quality software. So not someone that you want to train or someone who has to get to grips with the domain. So the interviews are largely technical based, and can you have a conversation, and would you think they would fit well culturally in the team? Whereas when I look to hire permanent employees, I put all weighting towards personality, because I think you can train and you can educate. That's almost the easy part, as long as you've got the right person to work with. So if they're really easy to talk to, they've got good energy about them, and they're really keen to learn, they take feedback well, and they like to provide input too. These type of characters, you can teach them anything, and those are the people that I'd like to grow, or I'd like to grow as permanent employees.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's a sort of a classic case of horses for courses, exactly. Isn't it? They do fill both, very different needs at a time for a business. Another thing we wanted to chat about was scaling and safeguarding culture. Obviously, I know News UK is already a huge company, but, you're still growing. What does your culture look like, and how do you protect that culture, certainly when it comes to onboarding new staff?
So something we're trying to do in a much better way at the moment. I think, as I said, we're moving from a legacy world through this digital transformation in so many different areas, that you're hiring lots of people all the time. We had many contractors, and now we're looking to move to more permanent staff, which is a challenge in itself. So what we're doing at the moment is putting in an RFC process to build those standards in through consensus through the team, so everyone knows what good looks like and everyone can follow that. And also putting in automated guardrails and do a lot more knowledge sharing, and making sure the onboarding process is slick. One of the things, it's the little things actually for onboarding, where people don't want to be sat around not doing anything without access to anything. So it's making sure they've got everything they need and get started. The knowledge base is there. You can direct them to the knowledge base to get going, get into the domain, because maybe not everyone knows the domain. And then they can use that RFC process and our documentation, our guidelines, and the way we work and our culture, infrastructure as code, GitOps. Following that culture, you build everyone in the direction. I kind of see it like having a plant, and you're just putting in those bamboo canes to make sure the plant's growing in the right direction. But you're not overbearing. You're making sure people have got the freedom to grow, as long as it's in the same direction.
Yeah. One thing I'd quite like to make, we may be going back a bit here, but I want to pick up on that you said there. You said you're moving from a legacy world into this digital world. So from your point of view, is the digital transformation that sort of the news and media sector have had to go through, is that still happening now? Are we still moving from sort of print media to this like digital output? Because I would have thought from my point of view that's happened and that's done now, but is it always self-perpetuating and keep moving forward? Are you always looking for the next thing to transform and move to?
So obviously I probably can't speak to sort of the overall strategy, but what I'd say is I think newspapers and digital will complement each other. And then digital is obviously a massive umbrella. So within that, you have to look at the type of clients that make most sense. So voice is obviously quite en vogue at the moment. So I think audio podcasts are going to be much bigger. Spotify have gone all in on podcasts now. And quite a few publications, you can see that they're putting out podcasts and podcasts behind a paywall. So I think wherever culture moves, I think that's where news will move to. So websites, apps, TV, whatever people are consuming, I think that's where news needs to look at.
What about the Humble newsletter? I mean, I get quite a lot of my morning info from the BBC Daily Roundup, and I subscribed to the Finamize one as well, which is quite good. Yeah, what's your take on the newsletter? Has that had its day, or is that still a worthwhile medium for communicating news?
I actually love newsletters. Mm-hmm. It's actually how I've done most of my learning. Mm-hmm. My inbox is always full of tech newsletters because I find them convenient. I can pop open my inbox and I can get that digest.
Yeah.
And then if I want to go into it, I can click on that. And for a news digest, that can then bring you onto the platform and then grip you on the platform. So very much I see newsletters, even RSS feeds. I think everything has its place, and it's just for different people, whatever different people prefer. And personally, I like that digest.
Yeah. No, likewise, my commuting in the morning, the 20-minute train journey is 10 minutes of reading the book and then 10 minutes of checking the newsletters. So, yeah, I completely agree with you there. If we go back to sort of your career journey, and one thing that you said at the beginning was obviously, you fell into sort of software development and engineering. Obviously, nowadays, there's much more formal entry routes into getting a career in tech. There's degrees in software engineering, degrees in computer science. So it's a lot easier to determine your career path now. You could probably find out, as you said, from like eight, that, I think I want to be a software engineer. So, when it comes to career paths, like how do you sort of determine whether you want to go, like maybe perm or contract, or how do you sort of start building up that path to get to maybe where you are today?
Yeah, I think it's incredibly different. I think almost as if there's too much choice now. Mm-hmm. For me, I think it's incredibly hard to be a full stack developer now. I think when you're on the LAMP or the WAMP stack, it was easy. There only say two choices, and that's what everyone did. And you built everything, you knew where everything went, everyone had done it before. But now you've got multiple cloud providers, each providing thousands of services. Even if you wanted to be a front end developer at CSS, HTML, JavaScript, but then you could have JavaScript on the back end. And now you don't even need to write JavaScript to write front end applications. And then as you keep going back, there are more and more nuances between, GraphDBs, SQLDBs, NoSQL, and keep going back into the infrastructure world, networking, container orchestration, actually the running the bare metal stuff. So what I'd say is that when you're starting out, try a bit of everything. I think go through the sushi board and try a bit of sushi and see if you like it. And if you don't like the wasabi, then try something else. And I think that will give you a really good appreciation for the full stack, as it were, and where you think your strengths lie and what you think you enjoy doing. And some people might like to spread themselves across the stack, which is definitely, a completely valid option, especially if you want to run a startup. You're going to have to run across that full stack. Obviously, cloud these days makes things a hell of a lot easier, and tools like Next pretty much give you everything out of the box. I think once you've played around and you know where your niche is or what you enjoy doing, find something that allows you to spend time on that. And not everyone can spend their spare time on something. Not everyone can spend weekends coding, and they shouldn't either. So if you can find a company that gives you that 20% time to learn, I think that's invaluable as well. And really learn those foundations. So don't learn a framework or whatever looks to be hot. Paralyzed through analysis, looking at all those newsletters, saying, oh, there's so much here, I don't know where to start. Just pick something. Maybe AI is quite exciting, so maybe go into Coursera and try out the ML course and see if that's for you.
Yeah, that's really good advice, and I do really enjoy the sushi analogy. Obviously, I'm a year and a half into a coding journey, and a lot of the things you just said there obviously really resonate with me personally, and it's stuff that I've heard time and time again. You know, you just can't get overwhelmed by all of it because you'll end up doing nothing. I've had it once or twice where, you know, I've tried to look into building an app or looking at, like, you know, even the types of languages I need, and then it can get quite scary. So yeah, I think it's sort of small victories every day, doing, just keeping doing it and doing it because you enjoy it.
Don't be scared you're making the wrong choice, because you can always change. You've always got plenty of time. And anything you learn, as long as you're learning the foundations and not some ephemeral piece of technology, that'll always carry forward. So if for some reason you wanted to learn Ada, don't feel that that's now put you in this Ada niche, because everything you learn there, you can take somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. One thing I wanted to ask as well is, again, sort of going back to the way you started your coding journey, you know, you fell into it. There wasn't really a formal process. Are we seeing that now with people who want to go into data? Sort of data scientists, data analysts, is their journey at the moment, is that sort of mirror yours when you started? And do you think we're going to start seeing more formalized approaches to, like, careers in data, as we have done with careers in software development?
Data as in data science?
Data science, yeah. The big data, okay. Yeah.
Okay. So I think it's a funny one, because I used to work with a guy who did his doctorate in machine learning. And I think that was in 1990. So machine learning is always, or data science, has always been bubbling away. It's always been there in the background. I think now it's because it's at the point where it's a lot more accessible. It's now become much more interesting. And big companies are putting it into their products, so a lot more people have awareness of it. So I don't know if it's more, needs to be more formalized. I think now there's just more cultural awareness. It's likely that if you're particularly good at maths, or that's something you enjoy when you're 16, 17, you're more likely maybe to go into that direction, and you'll start learning Python or whatever your weapon of choice is from an earlier age. And so you won't be the mathematician that becomes a data scientist. It's more likely that you'll grow as a data scientist, and programming is part of what you do with mathematics.
Yeah, amazing. I mean, again, that's a sentiment echoed by quite a lot of people. It's always good to ask, because we've had people before who've said, yeah, you know, data science or machine learning AI have been around since the 70s. It's only now that people are using it on more of a wider scale. One thing I wanted to ask you as well is about avoiding burnout. You know, obviously as a head of engineering, you must have, like, a pretty rigorous schedule and, you know, probably big projects that need to be completed. How do you, you know, coach your team and make sure that you yourself, you know, don't end up burning out and, you know, end up getting stressed at work?
So from a personal point of view, I would say, just try and learn about yourself. Yeah, if you don't know what burnout is, then, like, if you don't know what stress is or what depression is, you may not know, but you may get a sense of feeling of feeling a bit more tired, or maybe not that same sort of verve or desire to code. But I've had that before where I was like, I don't really want to code today. So sometimes maybe just look for something else to do. If you look back and you haven't taken a break for a while, certainly if you're a contractor, just take that break, take some time out, and also look for other things to do. When I was younger, I definitely spent, you know, say 16 hours on that sort of coding, learning, you know, doing it over and over and over again. So I now go to the sort of the gym in the morning and weekends, you know, make sure that I'm out and about and doing things. I think that's incredibly important to get that work-life balance. And I have definite FOMO. I'm always like, well, if I don't, or when I was younger, I did, if I don't learn this, then I'm going to get behind. But actually, I don't think that's the case. I think you can always return to it. And actually, if you're fresher, you can be more productive, you can learn faster, actually. And it will give you a much more longer career, and you'll be able to sustain it. And then from a team perspective, for me, it's just about not having an expectation.
So they should only need to work. You shouldn't expect your team to be firefighting. If your team's firefighting, then you have to look at why the fires are starting. Is it because of your processes? Is it because of CICD? Is it because of something else? So your team should be able to come in and be incredibly productive throughout the day and then be able to go home. And then they shouldn't need to be 24 hours on call. So I think that's incredibly important.
Okay, so one of the other things I wanted to talk to you about is, as a head of engineering, how do you decide what tech stacks to use? Obviously, there's always a big debate between you finding something that really fulfills the business needs of your technology department, but also there's also the desire to work with new and exciting languages and frameworks and stacks. So how do you as a head of engineering determine which path to go down? Is it a bit of compromise, or, you know, do you mainly make decisions based on what the business needs at that point in time?
Yeah, so as I touched on earlier, we have an RFC process where various heads across the engineering guild contribute and come together. And then everyone within the company is encouraged to comment in that RFC process on what good looks like. And then we can use that consensus to decide which technologies are right for us. And then that gives you, I'll use that sushi analogy again, that sushi board for the various teams to then pick from. And then they can choose the thing that makes most sense for them from a business perspective.
Amazing. Conversation's been really fun today. I've really, really enjoyed it. You've given me a lot to take away for certainly my own coding journey. So last thing I wanted to ask is, you know, if anyone's interested in careers at News UK, or if people just want to know more about, you know, you and the business, where can they find you? I mean, they can find you on every newsstand in the UK probably, but, you know, certainly people who maybe want to look at some of your digital offerings, or if anyone who's listening maybe wants to look at careers at News UK, where can they go?
Yeah, just go Google News UK, get on the homepage, and the careers link will be on there, or they can contact me directly.
Amazing. Thanks so much for coming on the show today, Craig. It's been really fun. And as I said before, yeah, there's been a lot in here that I'm going to take away and apply to my own learning. So thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks, Liam.
Cheers. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this Venturi's Voice podcast. You can find links to any resources mentioned in the episode in the show notes on our website. If you enjoyed the show and want to hear more, you can find us on SoundCloud, iTunes and Spotify. We also have a Slack community, which you can join via the link on our homepage at venturi-group.com. Thanks for tuning in. I look forward to seeing you again.